fortalece se va, este va en res, y si actividad de los amos, Maharaj, si lo preocupare, que Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vinda Ki Jaya Prema Se Gahoshi Krishna Chaitanya Pramudita Ananta Sri Arbeta Gadadha Sivasari Gaura Bhakta Vinda Ki Jaya Sri Sri Gadha Krishna Gopa Gopi Guru Shama Kuru Radha Kuru Kirika Mutan Ki Jaya Kantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki Sama Veda Bhaktavinda ki All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees
Yeah.
Iti Javasito Jo Ayano Prihitaya Nidvanya Paravaraja
Nidvanya Paravaraja
Tadahasam Bhavam Astita
Iti Vyavasito Buddhyam
Iti Vyavasito Buddhyam
Narayana Vikritayam Svanya Bhavam Ajnanam
Svanya Bhavam Ajnanam
Tatasvam Bhavam Astita
Tatasvam Bhavam Astita
Iti Vyavasito Buddhyam
Iti Vyavasito Buddhyam
Svanya Bhagavam
Ajnanam
false identification with the body. full of ignorance. In his original position of eternal servant, he engaged himself in rendering service to the Lord. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When one actually becomes purely Krishna conscious, no one has any right to rule over him. And situated in Krishna consciousness, one is no longer in the darkness of ignorance. And when freed from all such darkness, one is situated in his original position. Jivana Svarupa, Krishna Nityatas. The living entity is eternally the servant of the Lord. And thus, when he engages himself in the service of the Lord in all respects, he enjoys the perfection of life. Iti vyavasito puja narayana krihitaya hitvanya bhavam ajnana tathasvam bhavam astitaha. Thus Maharaj Khatvanga, by his advanced intelligence in rendering service to the Lord, gave up false identification with the body full of ignorance. In his original position of eternal servitorship, he engaged himself in rendering service to the Lord. Hare Krishna. So, after many years, I got the great privilege again giving class here in this most holy of holy places, Sri Dhammayapur, and then also on this most holy of all holy days, well, in the English speaking world, I think tomorrow is the day, but where I come from, Northern Europe, Scandinavia, I think also German-speaking world. So, Merry Christmas. Of course, sometimes the boys have discussions whether should we celebrate Christmas. It's a Christian holiday. No, it's actually not a Christian holiday. It has much older roots. It's pagan or very ancient, because in the north this is an important day, because it's the shortest day of the year, so it means from this day on we are going towards brighter times. Winter is the end is in sight of the dark winter. So it's naturally, has always been a day of celebration. And the Christians, they just accepted that and adapted it to their culture, claiming that this is the birthday of Jesus, which nobody knows when Jesus was born. But they conveniently settled for that day, so we can continue celebrating and call it a Christian holiday. So, here in India we have also a good excuse, because it's Gita Jayanti, so we can also make a festival, as we are doing here. So, yes, any excuse to make a festival, why not? There's no harm. I still remember my first Christmas as a devotee. I joined just a few months earlier, and we were traveling Sankirtan, had a Christmas marathon, and we're planning to go back to the temple, but somehow, because where I come from in Denmark, it's a country of islands, so we had to take a ferry, and we didn't realize there's no ferry going on Christmas Eve, so we got stuck. So we had to spend the night in a hotel, and then also a Christian mission hotel or places. So there we were, and we just took a glass of hot milk and got to bed. I felt a little strange. I became a little nostalgic. I thought, is that all? I mean, my whole life I'd been used to, you know, like I said, you also know this is the biggest celebration of the year. So, anyway, I wanted to make the point that sometimes, especially those of us who come from, not from a Vedic background, we have a little difficulties because we get the understanding that this culture we come from is all Maya, we should give it up. Just forget about all that you have learned. You're now a blank slate. But the problem is that we don't know the Vedic culture. We're not trained in the Vedic culture either. So sometimes we find ourselves in a kind of vacuum where there's no culture. We must give up a Western culture, but we don't really have something to replace it with. Therefore, of course, it's also very good. And Prabhupada also recommended that his disciples from the West, they would spend time in India to learn the culture. Because human beings, we need a culture. Yes, okay, if we are so advanced that we can simply chant Hare Krishna and, you know, but who is on that platform? That's for the Haridas Thakur category. Until we reach that platform, we need something to fill out our life, a culture in short. Culture, what is culture? Culture is everything. Everything we do is part of our culture. And we cannot just jump from where we were, our background before we joined ISKCON, and to, you know, a full-fledged Vedic culture, which is not even there in India, manifested today. There has to be a gradual transition. So. I wanted to make the point that we should not be too fanatic about, you know, rejecting the background that we come from, in the cultural background. In the beginning, we should be satisfied to add Krishna into that, add the chanting of the holy name, the hearing of revealed scriptures, following of our regulative principles, and then definitely it will be very much to our advantage to gradually accept more and more of the culture, which is Krishna's culture, the Vedic culture. But it has to be, it's a gradual process. And there's nothing wrong with that. The tendency of this modern world is to go to extremes. Either we, you know, we reject the Western culture completely, we shall have nothing to do with that anymore. We are now devotees, so we have to change, we have to make a full transition now. Or if we find out, or when we find out, that is not going to work, then sometimes we just reject the whole thing. Just forget about this. Krishna West. Sorry. I was getting into something controversial. The Buddhists, they are, yes, they get these ideas. Just have the philosophy and forget about the culture. We're going to, you know, stay as we are, but talk about Krishna, chant Hare Krishna. But that's also not what we should do. As with everything else in life, we need to find a balance. But that's very hard in this age, because modes of passion and ignorance are very strong. Passion and ignorance means, ignorance means too little, passion means too much. Goodness means balance. One way of, you know, concisely describing mode of goodness is everything balanced. But there's very little goodness in this age, so therefore how to find a balance. What we must try to find a healthy balance in all regards, all aspects of our lives. In this way we can be fixed in Krishna consciousness, happy, and feel at home as devotees, so that we can go on for our own life and go back home, back to Godhead at the end. Anyway, there's one thing here that I noticed is the very first sentence in Srila Prabhupada's purport struck me. He says that when one actually becomes purely Krishna conscious, no one has any right to rule over him. And it seems, it could superficially appear to be a defiant statement, to take it out of context. This is one of these statements that you can misquote and use as an excuse to just reject everything. Essentially, no one has any right to rule over me, so, you know, I don't care about the DBC and Guru Maya, Guru, you know, I'm now fully Krishna conscious. But obviously, it is not what it means. It should be understood in the context. We have to remember the whole, what is the situation here. That Maharaj Kripanga, he was asked to fight the demons on behalf of the demigods. And this was, of course, they were naturally very grateful for that. They were not able to defeat the demons, so he had saved them. So now they were indebted to him, and they wanted naturally to repay that debt by offering him a benediction. And for him to, he was practically on his side, he was obliged to accept that benediction. First of all, even though the demigods humiliated themselves in one sense by asking his help, but still they were his superiors. And to reject a generous offer by a superior personalities, it's not very polite or maybe not even proper. And as I said, besides that, it actually embarrassed the demigods further, because by rejecting their offer, he actually, they remained in the condition of being indebted to him. So one could say it was not so nice. But he did it anyway, and that is how I understand this statement by Srila Prabhupada. Practically, the benediction, the offer for benediction was more, it was almost an honor given by the demigods. And but Prabhupada says that because he had now become purely Krishna conscious, nobody had the right to rule over him, even the demigods. And therefore he had the right to say no thank you. Apparently, it's stated, explained in one of the previous verses, I think verse 43 is mentioned, that he left his palace. Apparently the demigods had given him a palace in the heavenly planet. He was so much favored by them. But he left that palace and went back to the earth. So I think that's how I understand what Prabhupada is what he means to say with this statement. There are an example to illustrate this is the story of Queen Kunti. She was, as we remember from Mahabharata, she was, as a young girl, she was serving Durvasa Muni very nicely. And he gave her the benediction that she could call upon any demigod she wanted. And being just a young girl, she was, you know, in a somewhat playful way, she tried out her benediction and called it Sangha. And he showed up, and she might even have been a little surprised. Oops, here is Surya there. And she said, okay, thank you very much. I'm sorry for causing you any inconvenience. I didn't want to. Please be happy and go back to your planet. But the sun god said, no, you cannot just call me like that. When I come, I come for a purpose. You must take something from me. I cannot just go back like that. I come here to, I'm going to offer you a benediction and you have to accept it. So of course, the benediction was he wanted to give her a child. And that was a problem, of course. He was not married. And for a girl to have a child outside of marriage means normally, in a normal human culture, that her life is basically finished. She's never going to get, nobody's going to marry her. It's a big problem. But to it, okay, no problem, I'll fix it. You can give birth to the ear. In this way, you know, your virginity will not be ruined. You can still get married. Of course, the problem was there was a child there, but she somehow solved that problem by just, putting karma in a basket and floating him down the river, pretending it never happened. But You all know this story, but the point here I wanted to make is that this is an example of how when a superior personality gives a benediction, you are kind of obliged to accept it. Principle which I have seen even people who are not devotees, they understand that. I was wanting, I was, that struck me about this, this verse in Prabhupada. All relationships are, after all, based on a giving and taking. Whenever there's, just like in Padasamrita, Rupa Goswami describes this, six kinds of loving exchanges between devotees. How does the verse go? Offering gifts in charity, giving, accepting charitable gifts, revealing one's mind in confidence, inquiring confidentially. Accepting Prasad and serving Prasad. These are the six symptoms of love shared between devotees. So, always there must be for a relationship to develop, to continue, there has to be give and take. If there's no give and take, then it stops. Now, of course, we cannot force anybody. We may come forward and want to develop or begin a relationship by offering our help, but there's no, you cannot insist that the other party has to accept. Sometimes we become frustrated because we all want to have loving relationships with other devotees. By coming forward and trying to open up, offer our service, our good feelings to another devotee, we are also putting ourselves in a vulnerable position because we may not get the reciprocation we are hoping for, and then there is possibility that our feelings will be hurt, and nobody likes that. Therefore, sometimes we become, very reserved. A little reserved is okay, but if we never take the risk of opening up, of coming forward and trying to connect, then we will not develop any relationships, any deep relationships. Other devotees, so that we have to take that risk. But also be prepared that we may not get the response that we are hoping for. That's the price. If we don't take that risk, we will just be lonely, just like there are so many lonely people in the world. Especially in the West, and India is not such a big problem. And there is more than 1 billion people on a in a country that is only one-third of the size of Europe, and it's hard to be lonely. Besides that, the Indians, they are still very much, much more at least than us Westerners, in a village consciousness. It's like an industrial people made the observation, having sometimes stayed with Indian families, sometimes very wealthy Indian families, living in a big house with many rooms. But like you said, somehow they still end up, all of them, sleeping in the same room. They feel better like that. So, anyway, the point is that this is one thing that if you want to be happy in Krishna consciousness, we have to have friends, devotee friends. And in order to get friends, we must also take a risk and open up, do something to offer our friendship. Take a risk and hope for some reciprocation, but be happy even if there is no reciprocation, or not the reciprocation we would like. That can be done if we are cultivating our loving relationship with Krishna. This is one of the biggest anxieties for the living entity to offer your good feelings to somebody and then have your feelings hurt. This may be the biggest suffering there is in the material world. I'll just relate a little experience I had once to illustrate that. I was on a train in Oslo in Norway, and I've been staying for a number of years. And it was on the National Day of Norway, and there was some young girls, like in the 20s, good looking, I think from immigrant descent, but anyway, they were trying to assimilate, trying to integrate, and was into the national celebration of the Norwegian National Day. They'd been downtown at a party, and they were on their way back. One of them was on the phone talking with, I believe, probably her boyfriend, and she was in a very upbeat mood, describing, oh, we had such a good time, we were on this downtown, there was a band playing, and we were dancing, and we were dancing, and it was so nice. Like, she was like, you know, like nowadays people speak on the phone, you know, in any public place, and as if they were, you know, persons. So the whole train, we all shared her, you know, ecstatic experience on the Norway's National Day. So that was one man, probably my age, maybe a little older, just a bum actually, a little dirty, you know, not very well groomed. He was sitting and he was looking, staring very intently at this girl while she was, you know, having this, you know, this upbeat phone conversation. I was just saying, look at her, fully focused. And then at the very end, she noticed that, of course. She finished her phone call, and then she looked over at him like that. Okay, so what do you want? And he was kind of, I believe, waiting for that. And he said, he'd been meditating on that answer. He said, Yeah. I'm looking at you because you're so cute. Obviously, hoping for, you know, some love and reciprocation. But, oh, alas, he didn't get it. What was her response? You old bum, you think I'm interested in you? And obviously I felt sorry for this man. I could just imagine how his heart was cracking. It was just a little love, just a little love. No, not to you. So, you know, in this way we suffer in the material world. But devotees, we are fortunate because we're not depending. We also need this. We also, in one sense, I mean, we want this also, you know, loving reciprocation with especially the other devotees. And as I said, we need to take a risk. But and we can do that because we are depending on the good feelings from others. Because why? Because we are depending on the good feelings from Krishna. And our focus should be to cultivate our loving relationship with Krishna. And it's very simple to do. We simply have to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Hare. And we have to do it with love. That cannot be overstated. All too often, we or I find ourselves chanting our japa in a kind of careless, sometimes even indifferent way. Just let's get done with this now. We've taken our vows. So, okay, I finished my 16 rounds. Now I can. Now the daily torture is over. Get on with my, something juicy, something. The mind doesn't like the holy name. That's unfortunately the situation. But we have to catch ourselves and not allow ourselves to chant like that. We should. Most important is that we try to chant Krishna's name as an offering of love to the Lord. This is our most important service. It may not give us anything. We may be annoyed by, our own japa, but we should still try to do it in such a way that Krishna is pleased. We should try to see things from Krishna's point of view. How does Krishna feel about what I'm doing, how I'm chanting his name? Is it pleasing? Is it nice for him to hear? If not, then we should do something. We should try to do everything, and especially chant in such a way that at least with the desire, with the aspiration to that Krishna will be happy with us, with what we are doing. And just that just that way of thinking, just trying to think like that, immediately that is the secret, then connection is there. Krishna immediately, oh, you become a little interested in how I feel. That's very nice. Now that's something new, I'm very happy. Krishna is immediately there, ready to reciprocate, and we will feel his love and reciprocation. And that will be enough for us to be, have all our emotional needs fulfilled, actually. And that will give us this solid platform on which we can take a risk to also reach out to other basically devotees, but even non-devotees. And not be so afraid that we will, you know, not there will be a negative response. So anyway, it's time to finish. There's still 5 minutes left. Anybody wants to add something?
Yes, Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
My
pleasure.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, as Prabhupada claimed in Matthew that religion is not an embrace, but not to follow its ethics.
If you keep the microphone, you never follow the
logic. Okay. Now share.
In between, a balance.
Okay. So, as Prabhupada very clearly stated that religion is not a hindrance, but one should follow its ethics.
Religion is not?
Not an hindrance, it's not a, any hurdle. One should follow its ethics, any religion.
It's not a hindrance. It's not a
hindrance. Hindrance.
But can follow any religion.
Okay. So it is also emphasized the need, you know, to approach Supreme Personality of God with any elevated goals.
Any religion.
Any religion.
Any religion.
No, that's the second point. So that all the cultures and all the cultures in the Eastern and Western, whatever it may be, in the entire world, so long as they are maintaining some principles. But only the thing is, deliverance is a little bit different. Suppose Christianity is different, then other religions, deliverance is a little bit different. But the object is the same. Ethics are same for each and every entity of the world, isn't it? So, what is my question is, then what is the last one about the different religions, that the object is the same?
Sorry, having a hard time understanding.
Prabhu, you said that the ethics is the same.
The ethics is the same.
The object is the same, so what is the loss if you go to another religion?
Any religion which teaches, you know, the right principles, but like, you know, Prabhupada was never, you know, always stressed that the goal is to reawaken our love of God. And any religion that will help you attain that goal, that is proper religion, that is true religion. So we have to see if that is accomplished, if we are actually becoming God conscious, then certainly, you know, whatever we follow, that is good. So, but the truth also has to be said that most of what goes on in the name of religion nowadays, there is no awakening of God consciousness. And Prabhupada also said they don't know who is God, they have no knowledge. So how can you develop your love for somebody you don't know? You have to know Krishna to love him. So where will you know Krishna? Yes, something is there, some maybe information, but very little to compare to what we will find in the Vedic scriptures, especially Srimad Bhagavatam. They're getting all information, detailed description, who is Krishna, how he looks like, what he does, you know, how beautiful he is, how charming he is, how kind he is. You will, you know, everything we need to reawaken our love. Therefore, by impartial judgment, we have to agree that if we really want to, you know, awaken our love for God, then there's nothing compared to this process of pure Krishna consciousness. But if you have some, want, if you attach to some other religion which, you know, and you are actually following, not just giving some lip service and you know, as Prabhupada said, thou shalt not kill, this in the Bible, but they, in the name of being Christians, they are simply killing. This is not good. Okay, I'll take one last question, and only 1 minute.
I mean, Prabhupada seems to recognize Jesus as a very exalted Lord, and these Christians wish to honor Jesus on that day. However, unclear that you may have a concept of that. How can we consider that anything but a positive?
How can we consider that?
Anything but a positive thing that these people, at least officially, wish to honor and exalt the Lord.
No, it's good. Prabhupada said we have all respect for Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you know, I think you know how it looks like, you know, nowadays, they're not. Who thinks about Jesus Christ on Christmas? It's just a time to, as they say in USA, pig out. I mean, it's just eat and drink and be merry. Mostly that's what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, there are some pious people in the world, you know.
Well, they pick out every day. They add Jesus, so that's awesome.
Yes, any connection with something higher is good. We don't, you know, want to condemn. We see the spark of Krishna consciousness and we try and fan it. Wasn't that Prabhupada's definition of what preaching is? Hare Krishna. Thank you.